Welcome back, everybody, to another super special edition, Terrible Towel Talk, Episode 7, the podcast for you, the Pittsburgh Steeler Nation. For all you members of the Pittsburgh diaspora, welcome. I am one of you. My name is Adam. I'm your host. I'm here with Neil. He is not only a blogger with BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, he's also a general football expert and super passionate about the Pittsburgh Steelers. My brother Neil, welcome all of you. We're recording this on Thursday, February 3rd, where we are just 3 days away from the big one, Super Bowl 45 in Dallas, pitting our beloved Pittsburgh Steelers against the Green Bay Packers, a franchise that admittedly until now I have not spared much of a thought for. Usually if we do play the Packers in the regular season, I just chalk it up to a free win. But now, given the last week and the Packer fan base's smug, entitled, ever-increasingly annoying attitudes, I've begun to put their team into a rare group, along with the likes of the Ravens, the Patriots, the Browns, the Bengals, the Vikings, the Raiders... a team I don't like much, in other words. Neil, why don't you tell us about your latest contact with a Packer fan?
I'm so glad you're finally coming around to this. I've felt that way about the Packers for a long time. But I was in the grocery store yesterday going to get some food to make some tuna casserole. And I see your quintessential Packers fan. He's decked out in green and gold. Zubas, exactly, but some cousin of the Zuba product line. He's doing his thing, and I'm kind of walking by him. I smirk to myself as I walk by. I've got a Steelers hat on, and he kind of glances an eye at me, looks back, and sort of, you know, tries to be tough and intimidating and stare. And I put up the one open hand with five fingers and show him my other thumb as I walk by. He flicks me off. I just kind of laughed and kept going. But to me, you know, with all due respect to the Packers franchise, their fan base is obnoxious. They're beyond insane with their feelings, their thoughts of the team that they have. I don't like them. I don't get along with a whole lot of Packers fans. I find that it's not just about the team. It's just all of them, you know, the smugness, like you mentioned, but there's this insane loyalty that blinds out all rational thought. And I don't deal with that well.
Well, I do have to say that I'm certainly guilty of blind and unending loyalty without much, logic thrown into the middle of it, but I'd like to think I do keep, you know, at least one foot planted in reality, and that's not what I've seen lately among these Packer fans. And I should note, for those of you who don't know, Neil and I, Pittsburgh natives, now live in the Twin Cities area, Minneapolis-St. Paul, which is basically 10 miles from the Wisconsin border, so we have plenty of chances to run into these Packer fans and their Zubas. So, lucky us, right? Anyway, I, for one, am super excited to finally be approaching game day. I'm tired of the run-up. I hate Super Bowl week. I really do. I just want to play the game. I'm tired of the constant rehashing. I'm tired of the will-they-won't-theys. I'm tired of second-guessing myself and losing sleep at night as I ponder the many, many variables. Will our team succeed? Will we take, you know, 150 yards worth of penalties of ticky-tacky calls and random flags? And I'm sick of thinking about it. I just want to get down to it. I want to play the game. I certainly hope that we'll see a good game, but I have to qualify that and say by good game I mean a 45-0 Steelers drubbing. So let's beat the hell out of the Green Bay Packers. Let's talk turkey. Let's talk game specifics. I think a good place to start is to kind of figure out where we are right now in terms of injuries. Aaron Smith, I've heard, is out. You may have heard differently, Neil. I don't expect Smith to play. Pouncey is logically must be considered to be out. I just don't see him playing. He's a high ankle sprain. He's got a broken ankle to boot. I just don't see him being able to play. The heart is certainly there, the desire is there, and I love him for it, but I don't see a hurt Pouncey being more effective or even as effective as, shudder to say, Doug Ligurski. What are your thoughts on the current Steeler injuries? Do you have any Packer injury updates for us? What's going on?
What I've got with Pouncey is a lot of what you're saying. I think, with all due respect to him, and I'm certainly not knocking him in any way, I think he's going to make sure everybody knows he's given 110% to try to play in this game, because that's the kind of guy the kid is. There's a difference between, you know, trying your best to get something healthy and not being able to do it, and simply rolling over and you know, not even bother to try. Certainly, these teams have dealt with these kinds of things before. Ligurski, while not a longtime veteran, I'm sure he's been preparing for the last 2 weeks with the likelihood that he will start in this game. Everything that we're reading right now is that that will be the case. Ligurski's up for an interesting matchup with the Packers nose tackle, their answer to Casey Hampton, B.J. Raji, in his second year out of Boston College, turning in quickly to one of the premier nose tackles, both from a run stopping and a pass rush perspective. He had, I believe, 6 sacks on the season and an interception that he returned for a touchdown against Chicago. Adam, you and I both saw that. It will be very difficult for Ligurski. That's not the kind of guy you want to throw somebody who hasn't played a whole lot this season in against. But at the same time, you know what Tomlin's mantra is. It's, you know, if one goes down, somebody else is stepping in his place. Now it's Ligurski's turn. You know, to be honest, we won a Super Bowl with a guy who played like he was on ice skates getting pushed backwards against Darnell Dockett in 2009. So, it, you know, this can work to the Steelers' advantage. It's really up to him. You know, the harder that he's going to play, the better off the team's going to be, and everyone's going to rally around it.
Yeah, well, there's certainly no better chance to test the Tomlin one guy goes down, another one steps up and takes his place mantra. So I guess this is a good chance to see whether or not he's right about that. Certainly hope he is. yeah, that Ligurski versus Raji matchup is key. Another one, I think, is Lamar Woodley versus whomever the Packers play at right tackle. I have no idea. You have any insight into that one?
Yeah, the right tackle is something called Brian Bulaga.
Oh, right.
He's a rookie out of... Yeah, exactly. He looks like one, too. Get a picture of him up there. Poster boy for skinheads nationwide. He's an ugly-looking dude. Woodley is perhaps, I mean, next to Roethlisberger, probably the most prolific Steelers postseason player. This is a guy who has an NFL record of at least 1 sack in 6 consecutive NFL games. He also set the record prior to this playoffs with having 2 or more sacks in 3 consecutive games. He dominates up front. He dominates in the backfield. He can stop the run. He drops into coverage very well. Woodley's been quiet, certainly over the last couple games of the regular season, but it's come along in the playoffs, and Bulaga is a guy that he's struggled. I mean, he's without question the weak link on the Packers offensive line. He's given up 13 sacks this season, 28 pressures, which is the first and second highest on the team going into this game. While he has gotten better over the last couple games, you look at their matchup against Dallas back earlier this season, playing against a true 3-4 team the same way that the Steelers are. DeMarcus Ware and Greg Ellis had an absolute field day on him. Beat him left, right, and center, and I don't see why Woodley wouldn't be able to do the same type of damage to him. He's a big-game player, and I think that's probably the Steelers' biggest matchup advantage going into this game.
I would absolutely hate to be a rookie facing Lamar Woodley in the Super Bowl. That's that'll keep you up at night, even worse than, I don't know, some heartburn from a hot sausage sandwich, maybe.
I'd hate to be just about anything other than a tank going up against Lamar Woodley, because that's the strength and speed that the guy has, and plus he gets a 3-yard head start crashing into you all game. He's going to wear you down. You know, Bulaga's a big boy, but Woodley's going to have his way with him by the end.
Another couple of players we should probably touch on, not exactly a matchup because they're mirrors of each other. They're both defensive players anyway. But Defensive Player of the Year, Troy Polamalu, and Defensive Player of the Year runner-up, Clay Matthews. We won't talk about hair because everyone's been there, done that. But who do you think of the two of them will have a bigger impact on the game for their defense?
Well, to be honest with you, looking at when you phrase his impact, I want to say that Polamalu is probably going to have the advantage because he's, you know, he's a predator out in the defensive secondary. He bides his time and he waits for the kill shot. Matthews is relentless and he continues to you know, swarm and overflow the defense. And Dom Capers with the Packers has a great scheme for him. Matthews is used very effectively. He goes outside, he goes inside. He's not the best run supporter in the league, and we have two outside linebackers that defend the run better than he does. But he's going to get to the quarterback. He can take it to the bank. He'll have at least one sack in this game. But in the end, Polamalu is the guy that's going to make a big play. If I were betting, that's the way that I would go. But they're two spectacular players, both very deserving of the Defensive Player of the Year award. Obviously, it's great for Polamalu to have won that. But I could see either one of them, both of them, in fact, having an outstanding game. But Polamalu is going to be the guy that's going to have more of an impact.
Polamalu has, of course, Troy has been there twice before. You know, I think that's something that we cannot understate, the fact that our team is so loaded with Super Bowl veterans, and they have exactly one ring winner on the Green Bay Packers, and that's John Kuhn from our practice squad 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to ask. Who is? Oh, that's right, the guy we didn't want. Right. We didn't need him. You can have him. I mean, want a multifaceted fullback, go ahead.
You cannot overstate that, and I think that's key when you talk about, you know, detractors, people who don't think Roethlisberger is a good quarterback, will immediately bring up his performance in Super Bowl 40, his first Super Bowl performance, where he was pretty dreadful, but that his team was good enough to win in spite of his play, perhaps, but it's certainly not at least helped by his play. And that's the same thing I think you can honestly expect to see out of a lot of these Packers. They've never been there before. This is the biggest stage. Our guys are used to it. No first-day jitters for us. I think that's going to be huge.
If Packers want to get into, you know, discounting experience, and, or perhaps even go as far as to say, well, Ben has only played really, you know, a one decent game out of two that he's been there. I know in Super Bowl 40, he played a lot better than Aaron Rodgers did that day. Charles Woodson is another guy that comes to mind, somebody with Super Bowl experience. His defense had 41 points hung on him the last time that he was there, when he was with Oakland playing Tampa Bay. He got absolutely smoked. In fact, I believe I want to... fantasy football playoff tournament because of Charles Woodson's lack of performance that game. So experience does matter. I don't want to hear from anybody that it doesn't, certainly not when, you know, one of these two teams offensively led a 92-yard touchdown drive to win a Super Bowl. That's going to come into play. I don't want to hear that it won't. From an X's and O's perspective, I would expect the Packers to come out and really try to go for the throat as early as they can. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Steelers down by a touchdown, maybe 10 points in this game at one point. The Packers like to start fast, but it's how you finish, and the Steelers are built for that. So come fourth quarter, ask again what experience matters in this game.
Boy, I tell you, I think you really hit the nail on the head right there. I mean, if you look at the Packers and their play in the NFC Championship game against the Bears, they were all over those Bears in the first quarter, up 14-0 quick, and then they never did another thing until late in the fourth quarter. They were in danger of losing that game to the Chicago Bears and their third-string quarterback. I mean, that's how much they went to sleep. And I'm sorry, our fourth quarter team is a hell of a lot better than the Chicago Bears, and I think that's really what it's going to come down to right there. You'll see Green Bay start fast, and then the Steelers hopefully can take over and get some points on the board and grind out that clock. All right, let's move on. One other award that was handed out this week, in addition to Troy's Defensive Player of the Year, was, of course, the Coach of the Year. Overwhelming landslide for Bill Belichick, and say what you will about that. I'll keep quiet. I am absolutely flummoxed that Tomlin received not a single vote. Not that he didn't... I didn't really expect him to win. I mean, Belichick had a phenomenal year, but not even a single vote for Mike Tomlin, a guy who was going into the season without his starter for a quarter of the year due to suspension, coming off a 9-7 season last year, and the next year we're in the Super Bowl and he gets not a single vote? What? Explain to me this madness.
What it made me think of when I saw it last night and my jaw hit the floor, when I recovered, I was... of one of the first interviews that Tomlin gave after he was hired as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I believe he was talking about one of his mentors, Tony Dungy, and he referred to him as a leader of men. which is usually a term that they reserve for generals and admirals and people in the military of, you know, high elite supreme status. You think of the Coach of the Year award, I don't necessarily think of the term a leader of men, but at the same time, when I think of somebody at that level, it's somebody that doesn't have to win those kinds of awards. It's not given to somebody who's recognized for the things that really make a team. You know, it's somebody who is able to make waves without moving much. It's able to lead from a broad direction and a broad vision without getting noticed all the time. And I think a lot of these things personify Mike Tomlin. I think he knows that. He's aware of that. He's a competitor. I'm sure he's not real happy about the fact that he didn't win a Coach of the Year, but somebody had posted on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, a column that I wrote today. When Mike Tomlin walks down the Southside facility, he doesn't see seven Coach of the Year trophies. He sees, you know, six Super Bowl trophies and hopefully a seventh. That's really what he's working for, and that's the moral of the story here. I mean, Belichick, I agree with you. I you know, if I'm being objective, I think you can give that award to Belichick. I think you can give it to Tomlin. I think you can give it to a lot of guys, but what ultimately matters here is the game that Tomlin is playing in, and that's the mark of a great coach. He's able to get his team from the depths of despair back in March and April. Things were falling apart, and I was one of the people calling the sky is falling. But Tomlin kept it together. He kept consistent. He's relayed the same message game in and game out, practice in and practice out. The standard does not change. And that's why I put him in that type of a level. He's a leader of men. He is a true team and human manager. You know, it's not about a trophy and it's not about the X's and O's as much as it is putting his guys into a position to succeed. And, you know, he didn't win the trophy, but nobody did a better coaching job this year than Mike Tomlin did. I don't care what you say. You only got one trophy to give, and that's fine, whoever you give it to. But nobody did a better job than he did.
I agree. I don't think Tomlin is going to be too upset if he's not lifting a Coach of the Year trophy, but on Sunday gets to lift his second Lombardi. I think that's the key thing there. He's worried about one thing, and he's worried about the right thing. And I certainly love him for that. All right, we're going to move on a little bit here. On a related note, this is a good segue into our next item up for conversation, and that's our trivia question. Every week, Glenn from the Steeler Fans of Minnesota writes us a little bit of trivia, and I, Adam, get to play trivia host, which is a role I'm not altogether unfamiliar with, and read the question to Neil. Neil gets to try to guess the correct answer. I will, of course, give the correct answer after Neil's had his go. So all of you members of the Steeler Fans of Minnesota who are listening, you get a chance to write down that answer. Bring it with you to McGovern's on Super Bowl Sunday. Correct answers will go in a drawing for great prizes at halftime. So, Neil, let's just throw the caveat out there. You have not heard the trivia question. You have no idea what I'm about to ask you, and you're not going to look this up on Google as I ask you. Correct?
I have no idea, and I will not.
Okay. Neil, I believe you're about 500 on these so far, aren't you? Or maybe one over so far?
I think I'm like 1,010%.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see how you do on this one. It's coach-related, so that's what I meant by a nice segue from our last segment on Tomlin. Okay. How many teams? I should say first, there's a hint on this, but I'm not going to tell you the hint. Let's see if you can get it without the hint, and then maybe I'll give you the hint if you don't get it. But hintless, here's the question. Here we go. How many teams have at least three coaches with multiple Super Bowl appearances? How many NFL teams have at least three coaches? And that's not... Yeah, it's head coaches, I believe. Three head coaches with multiple Super Bowl appearances.
Okay, I would say then, obviously, the Steelers.
Okay, well, who are the coaches that have had more than one Super Bowl appearance for this?
That's Chuck Knoll. Okay. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and the should-have-been Coach of the Year, Mike Tomlin.
Okay, very good, very good. Knoll with four, Cowher, of course, with two, win and a loss, and this will be Tomlin's second. There's only one team that have had at least three coaches who've been to more than one Super Bowl apiece, and that's the Steelers. Knoll with four, Cowher with two, Tomlin, this will be his second. Of all the other teams who've gone to multiple Super Bowls, they at the most have two coaches that have been to more than one each. So there you go. Steelers is your answer. Neil, ta-da! We'll give you 100% on that. All right, with that, it's time to wrap things up on Terrible Towel Talk, Episode 7. We want to thank you for listening. This will be our last podcast before the big day, Super Bowl 45, this coming Sunday. Neil, you and I are going to do at least one pregame podcast, maybe a halftime one or something, but everybody look for that on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Check out Neil on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, of course, and if you're in the area, check out Steeler Fans of Minnesota at SFOMINN.com. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Adam.
And I'm Neil.
Go Steelers!